Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. We're going to jump right into this interview. We had a few little techie glitches, but we're going to jump right in. We've got a very good friend of mine from way back. This is maybe 20 years ago. Mr. Matt Record. Say hello, Matt. How are you?
How's it going, Nikki?
I know you've been like stressed because you're like, man, I can't see myself on this. But you know what? We can see you. So don't worry. You're going to get a copy of a video and you will see yourself. So
perfect. The audio is golden.
So you and I used to work at Guitar Center 20 years ago. What a blast that was, because that job, as you know, tested a lot of our passion for music. And it was so great to always laugh with you in acoustics and just kind of shoot the shit with you. And we always used to talk about the Allman Brothers, Dave Matthews, Fish, all the jam bands we love. And we talked about country music. We talked about blues. We love all the same, you know, artists. Tell me, like, what was the moment of zen for you that made you want to be an artist, that made you want to be a musician?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I will say, and I was telling my son this just last night, when I was in junior high, and you'll have to stick with me here. When I was in junior high, there was a raffle for a go-kart. All my friends put in all their savings. It was like $1 a ticket. I had $1. I put in one ticket. I won this go-kart. I was on the front page of the Plymouth, Indiana paper and everything. When I was a couple years older, my dad was like, I really wanted this guitar. And my dad was like, hey, if you give your little brother that go-kart, I'll buy you this guitar. It was a Yamaha electric guitar, not very expensive. But my dad always had an old guitar laying around, and he knew a couple chords. And I mean, I'm trying to think of what exactly gave me the bug. I mean, Metallica, I guess, probably, you know.
That's awesome. That must have been Enter Sandman. That must have been the record, right?
Well, you know what it was? It was Injustice for All, because it was one. The song One was playing on MTV like crazy, like the top of the hour all the time, you know. And I think that's what it was. And we went on a road trip to went family vacation to Washington, D.C., and we drove there from Indiana. And I remember having the Walkman, and I just listened to And Justice for All over and over again.
That's awesome.
So, but yeah, and then they followed that up with the Black Album, and it's more accessible. It's a lot more hooks, you know, and it was just like, that just lit a fire big time, because I was big into hip hop before that, which I still enjoy, of course. But that's a switch flip there, man, with Metallica for sure.
Well, you know what? What's awesome is I was also huge into hip hop. Like, I used to love Black Sheep, Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, all yeah.
They were coming out right around that time. So that is a huge flip. But I also love Metallica. You can't not love that record because it is so accessible. It's so hooky. Big monster rock guitar hits and
five huge hits or something.
Yeah, it was so great. So I love that. So what did you start playing, like, in your room, and you just started learning songs, and just your dad was showing you chords, and did you start a band eventually?
Yeah, you know, my dad showed me the D chord and kind of how you pick up your finger and you add your finger on that. And he showed me that, and I learned that little part. And then I really wanted the Metallica songs. So I learned from Guitar World magazine, basically from tablature. Wow. And then I would buy tablature books. And really, I learned little riffs and little parts of solos that I could handle, you know, but I didn't learn complete songs. I remember my older brother being like, can you even play a whole song all the way through? I'm like, I don't think I can.
Isn't it funny? Older brothers just heckling you all the time. I remember telling my older brother, I was like, we were listening to the Top Gun soundtrack, and I was man, I would love to play electric guitar. And he looked at me and he's like, dude, it would probably take 4 years to learn that. And I was like, yeah, at least. And he was trying to deter me, but I was like, nah, you're not going to squash my dreams.
Yeah.
But leave it to our older brothers, dude. It's like, they're going to heckle us even when we're trying to you know, better ourselves with art, man.
Sure. Part of the drive is that, like, I'm going to show these people, you know, or something like that. Because I remember even before that, when I was really little, I saw this in a craft book or something. And it was like, you take a shoebox, you cut a hole out of the top, and then put rubber bands around it. And, like, you know, it kind of mimics a guitar. And I remember, like, I did that, and I was like showing people, and I perceived it as everyone just started laughing at me, you know? And so it's like, I feel like I have a drive from coming from that moment. I can still remember it. So
you're not the only one. I think all musicians come from a place of, I'll show you one day. You know?
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that fire that comes from, like, I don't know if it's isolation or if it's from just not wanting to fit in or trying to fit in. Mm-hmm. But then there's that point where it's like you realize every musician kind of comes from that place. And then we all find each other and it's like, let's start a band. Let's do something. So what was that first kind of band that you started or played with, you know, jammed with friends in high school? Or what was that first experience like?
Yeah, the first person I played with was my friend Chaz, who lives in Cali now. And he played drums. He had a drum set, and we talked about it for a while. And I was like, "Yeah, I can play." You know, Smells Like Teen Spirit. He's like, "Yeah, so can I." And he, you know, he listed the couple songs that he knew, which I happened to know. And so we went over there, and I remember being in his room, which is funny. I haven't really thought about this since then, but I can picture it exactly. And you know, it starts out with just the electric guitar, kind of quiet, and then when the drums kick in. Like I started laughing and like I couldn't launch into the big guitar part the first time we played it because I was just the power of it was so awesome to me that it was just, you know, we had to do a couple takes to like actually be able to come in on time because it was so the power of live music and playing with someone else was so
it's electrifying. Awesome. I mean, I still feel like that first time that you have that experience I think is so electric. And it's funny that you started laughing because I just remember kind of feeling giddy in the same way because it's like nothing you've ever been a part of. And it's like, you can just feel the power. And it's what's so crazy. It's only like 2 to 4, 3, 5 people, whatever it is.
Sure.
But I mean, it just feels larger than life. And I love that you kind of like felt that you started with a great song too. Like that's crazy to start with a Nirvana song because that's already a big, you know, rock guitar riff.
Right.
Just to kind of like carry
it. It's simple, right? So it's accessible.
That's amazing. So did you start writing original songs then? Or when did you get that kind of bug to want to like be a musician full time or kind of like go after it? Was there a point where you were like, let's start a band with, you know, Chaz and you just started playing, auditioning bass players or what?
You know, we jammed a little bit, even with the bass player once or twice. But really, when I met my friend Kale, who you may have even met, I mean, he got me the job at Guitar Center in L.A. And my friend Kale from the same small town called Plymouth, Indiana. And I was friends with his older brother. Kale's a couple years younger than me. And he could play like slap bass, you know, he could do Chili Pepper stuff. And so that blew my mind. And then I got into funk big time. And so Kale and I started forming bands and playing, and we were playing covers. I didn't really start writing really until LA, which was like 2002. So I played mostly covers and played in bands in college and stuff like that. And then when Kale moved out to California, I kind of followed him after I graduated college. And then I was writing lyrics on, you know, receipt paper when I was working at Starbucks. And actually when I was in college, I had a thought of, I didn't know what I wanted my major to be. I tried elementary education, was like, no way, dude, I can't be a teacher.
And you would have been a good elementary school teacher, though.
maybe. I don't know. But
those kids would have run all over you, though, man.
Yeah, but I loved like creative writing classes and poetry and stuff. And so I became an English major to take more of those classes with songwriting in mind. I couldn't do it yet, but I wanted to learn how, right? So, and you know, you have to write 100 crappy songs or 1,000 before you get anything good, you know? So I definitely went through that grind for sure. And it took forever.
Did you go to IU? I don't remember where you went to college.
I did. Yeah. I went to Butler at first and then I transferred to IU. So yeah, there's kind of influences musically at both those places. I had a really diverse kind of musical friends that I met and classes I took. I was actually a music history minor. It was actually rock music history at IU, where I took a Frank Zappa class. I took a Jimi Hendrix class.
That's awesome.
History of rock in the 60s, history of rock in the 70s and 80s. I mean, it was so cool. I just ate that up, man.
Well, I'm going through a huge Jimi Hendrix phase. What was the coolest thing you learned in the Jimi Hendrix class? Do you remember?
Oh, man. It was so, I mean, it was just so immersive because really, you know what? He had, what, 4 official albums, maybe, or 5, you know, and then there's stuff that came out posthumously. The coolest thing was the year after I took the class, So let me think. The bass player of Band of Gypsies, Buddy Miles, Billy Cox.
Billy Cox, yeah.
Billy Cox came and spoke to the class. Oh, and so he invited like, the old students to come check it out too. And like, so that was just hearing that's him wild. Talk and just seeing him in person, you know, is just insane. I mean,
yeah, that's like seeing like a phantom, you know, like,
yeah,
this ain't real. This is crazy. Yeah.
Dude, like, he played bass on Machine Gun. I mean, yeah, like, are you kidding me?
Crazy. It's
like, yeah, so
that's amazing.
It was just, and it was funny because I had friends who were musicians too who took the class, and they'd be like, kind of like cheating off me a little bit, or looking at them like, how are you not like, how are you not so like, into this? Stuff, I'm like, yeah, exactly. I memorize all this stuff, you know.
Well, let me ask you. So you graduate school, and I remember you came to LA soon after, right? You were about 22, 23?
Yeah, yeah. I graduated, and I headed right there. Yeah, I would have been 22 probably, yep. Drove.
Now, you know, I talked to a lot of people that moved to LA, and I'm from here.
Sure.
But, I mean, I find that to be such a courageous move because, first of all, you're away from family, you're away from friends, and you have no idea what this city's going to be like, but everybody says you got to go to LA if you want to do music, or New York. Right. Those are the two cities you go to, you know? So yep. You come here. What was your first experience like, just like getting into LA and seeing the music scene, or just kind of like vibing from it, or being off put from it, you know?
Right, right. So I guess I would say, you know, first year experience in California, like, oh, I'm in Hollywood. And it's like, oh, Hollywood's not very nice. you know yes. what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Hollywood proper is, there's a lot going on there. And I've heard Ben Affleck talk about it too. And like someone telling him like, you're in a heavy crack block, you know, just like, like really?
Well, because everybody comes here and they're like, oh man, I'm going to Hollywood. And
yeah. Yeah.
And it's like anybody from LA is like, ooh, you going to Hollywood? Yeah. Like, what are you thinking? Yeah. You know, so it's funny that everybody thinks that, but
yeah.
So your experience, you're like, you're in Hollywood. Were you living in Hollywood?
Well, briefly for about a month, and then we moved a little bit. We moved to Los Feliz, so pretty close, but in a better area. And you know, music wise, moved in with my buddy Kale, who I mentioned, and then his good friend, who was also a guitar player. His name is Kevin Wolpoff. So we tried to find drummers. And I think we did the Recycler probably, you know, and met a guy who I'm still friends with today, Pete Pace. He's in a band called London After Midnight. Their album is really big in Germany right now. This album they just released. It's crazy. He plays in Mexico and like he plays on some pretty big festivals and this kind of a niche band, you know, but regardless, we got a rehearsal space at this giant warehouse. And it was in downtown LA, which is another form of like dirty LA, if you will, where it's just like, holy cow, this is welcome to the jungle. Right.
Right.
And I remember just like the sheer size of this building filled with bands. So there's like 200 bands in this or whatever it was. It was just like, right. Holy cow, like the saturation. Right. So it's like, this is not going to be easy. Not that I necessarily thought it was, but it was like you're hit with reality of like, you know, you got to stand out or you got to. And what was kind of cool about that is, you know, speaking of Metallica, I was also into lots of different heavy metal, Pantera, Megadeth. We paid rent at that studio warehouse to Chris Poland, who was the guitar player for Megadeth on Peace Sells Who's Buying.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That is awesome. Well, I mean, that's like an LA thing. You know, it's yeah. like, you know, there are so many heavy hitters here, but there's this history, there's this legacy, and like you're right. I mean that feeling of like seeing what the competition's like. Mm-hmm. I mean it's crazy and it's intimidating, and everything yeah. about it is like, oh my god, this is terrifying to do. And that's mm-hmm. why I love when artists like when they're faced with that, what they do with that. It's like,
yep.
But you realize, and you know this now. You're not really competing with anybody else. You're competing with yourself. You think you're competing with everybody else, but really it's about how hard you're going to push yourself to get where you want to go and how you kind of sort through the circus. I feel like the industry is like a giant wild, wild west circus where you have all these kind of like swindlers running 90% of it, you know? Yeah. And then you have these like good-hearted musicians that just want to make a living doing this, and you're trying to like survive. You're like playing with a casino. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're just trying to trying to make your music like kind of find a place, and it's with all these swindlers. So
yeah, man,
you were here for like I think 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah, I was here for three years exactly to the day. Like I came out on like May 25th and I left on May 25th, 3 years later. So, you know, part of me wishes I would have stayed. You know, it's okay to have regrets in life, I think, especially right. as you get older. And, you know, I do and I don't regret leaving. I think if I would have stayed, you know, there were some good things that were happening, but it was also at the time I was like, I got to get out of here. There was, you know, some other things going on with like band kind of broke up right. with my best friend. There was some turbulence there, which interesting fact is Kale was, he was the bass player for Hillary Duff for her touring band. Wow. So he was on Macy's Day Parade. He was at Madison Square Garden playing with like Maroon 5 and like, you know, which he did. The music was not satisfying and kind of embarrassing if you're trying to be a legit like
right.
rock musician or something. But, you know, it was just a cool job for him. And we're like, oh, sweet. That's awesome. But it took it away from us like living together all the time, playing music every day. It took because right. he would go on tour for 2 months, you know. And so we're just like, well, you know, we played at the Kibitz Room a lot. We'll pop by. That was fun.
Well, you know what's funny? It's like, I feel like so many musicians, you know, and a lot of it, it's like, this is what I've learned too. It's like, you have to find musicians that have the same vision, because the guys I started the band with, none of those guys are in the band anymore. And it's
yeah.
not because like we hated each other. Some guys, we definitely had some skirmishes, but those are both squashed. But it's like the vision of the band, like for me, it's always been like, yo, I want to take this somewhere. And like, everybody has to be on that page. And if everybody's not on that page and willing to sacrifice everything for it, you're never going to get there. And it just sucks because especially in this city, and you know this, LA is full of session cats. Mm-hmm. So they're like, yo, I can do this gig and eat shit for 20 years and then make it with no guarantee. Mm-hmm. Or I can take this really cushy gig where I'm already playing stadiums with music that sucks. I'm going to take the gig that pays where the music sucks. And I'm like, why? Why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah. And we were thinking like, hey, this is going to give us lots of connections to, and it kind, you know, it kind of did here or there. I mean, but nothing really materialized. And it's interesting. You talk about, you know, the one person with the kind of singular vision, can you get all these other people on board, and can you be a dick when you need to be? Like, that's not in my personality, you know? And so it's right. like, and I tried to do that and be that a little bit more in a later band I was in. And, you know, it's tough, man. You got four different people with all different wants and needs, you know? And it's, geez. I mean, you think about even Rolling Stones, or, you know, they're still together, but it's like, you know, there's so much turbulence, man. Yeah.
And that's so much of it. It's like you realize so much of this lifestyle it's risky, and it's like you're kind of like traveling salesman. That's why I always tell people, like, I'm like, you're just trying to like get to the next city and do your gig and then get to the next city and just make it out of this whole circus alive and healthy with no addictions or like, no, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, I've lost so many band members to addictions.
Yeah.
And these are like super talented people, but also you lose people to just like having this quest of domesticated life, home life versus road life. And like the road warriors don't necessarily have a good home life. You know what I mean? They're on the road all the time and they're not around to see their family. So like, you have to make this like choice of like a fork in the road. So I love, and you know what? I always knew like you had the passion for music, and you know, it's like, what's really amazing is that I love that you're still playing and you're still gigging and you're still out there, because that's what it takes. And that's who you are. You know what I mean? That's why I reached out to you to be on a guest on the show. So you know what? Do you have a guitar close by? Because just in case we have any, techie glitches, why don't you play something live for us?
I could probably do that. Yeah, I got a guitar. I'd have to tune it up a little bit.
Let's do it. Let's have you play something first. Grab a guitar.
Okay.
Have you play something, all right?
All right, let's see here.
Look at that. It's right next to you. That's so perfect, of course.
Whoa, what do you know? It's definitely not in tune, though, so hold on that.
It'll be close enough for radio. Don't worry, dude. All
right. Well, let's see here. I'm trying to think of what to play here.
Anything you want. Anything you want, because Sam was telling me, you know what, if we play a song and he can't come back, the show is halted. So let's – I was like, you know what, I'll have him play something live. That'll be good.
Cool. Well, I wrote a song after LA, kind of about LA, and you know, you can you embellish for storytelling purposes.
Yeah.
Right? So part of this song is true, and part of it, there's a couple liberties, we'll say, right?
I love it.
Creative liberties.
So when you say you wrote a song about LA, is this like nostalgic? Is this kind of like bittersweet? Tell me a little bit about the song.
I would say both of those are pretty accurate. Now I'm looking for my capo.
God damn it, where's that damn capo? You're like, I know, I put it here somewhere. Oh, you're such an artist, Matt.
Well, you know what? I mean, I guess I could try it in a different key, right?
Yeah, that's all right. Whatever you got. I could give you mine, but I'd have to send it through cyberspace somehow.
Man, I wonder if this will work.
Let's try it.
Years back, I left my home in search of a pan full of gold, the river flow on down to me below, brought me nothing cold, but when I returned, empty hands and nothing to show. People point, laugh at my clothes. Tattered soul is all that remains. Well, I was their hope so many years ago. Now they snicker when they speak my name. At least I tried the hard road to fight. Memories more precious than gold. What's the next part? This is the most crucial part. It's the LA part. Let's see here. Oh, crap. Man, it is slipping my mind now.
Make it up as you go.
Don't care much. Fortune and such. We used to think the money was king. At least I tried. The hard road divides. Memories more precious than smoke. Moved away from the Hollywood play. Certain to disappoint a few. Well, I went up north to the Oregon shore. Kicked around by the wind and the rain. At least I tried. The hard road. Memories more precious than smoke. Memories more precious than smoke.
Yeah, man, that was awesome, dude. That was awesome.
Thank you, man. I mean, honestly, I forgot the best part in the middle and I never had to sing it like Johnny Cash before, so.
But you know what? Let me tell you, there's something to that version that you just did because it was giving me chills.
Oh, good, man.
Song. And you know what? You could have just made it. You could have read the McDonald's menu in that second verse. I was already in it, man. I'm nice. Like, I'm sold, man. No, you've got such a great feel when you play guitar and when you sing too. And it's like, man, I hope you never stop doing this because you got a gift and it has to always be something that you tap into because look what you just made out of like thin air. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, thanks, man. And you know, I think we probably got, you know, you and I would probably lose perspective on our talent sometimes, you know, yeah, it's like we've got so many years, 30 years of playing guitar. Right. So it's like, it's
I'm going to give you some amazing perspective that I just had with a very talented guitarist and songwriter friend of mine. He was like, you know, what's funny about being a musician? He's like, if you think about it, he's like, we could go up to any person, any profession, and be like, how long do you think it takes to get to where you're working in your profession? And most people would take about 10 years, 15 years, 8 years, 5 years, 4 years, maybe 2 years, depending on the profession, maybe even less. But when it comes to musicians, it will take 20, 30 years at least. Because I know for me, I could not honestly really do this without at least 15 years or 20 years of music experience and lessons and learning and just being able to get out there and do it. And it's like, that's something that's very, I like, it's musicians don't get that acknowledgement. And it really, if anybody just said, oh, if I said, okay, go ahead, you're going to start gigging, here's a guitar, let me know when you can start gigging shows and writing songs. I mean, there's no way they'll do it in a year. There's just no way it'll happen in a year.
Right. I definitely see what you're saying, and I don't want to shit on your point, but something that that kind of dawned on me the last year or so was, I think it was I watched the Lynyrd Skynyrd documentary, and those dudes were like early 20s, and then I'm watching Santana play at Woodstock. He was like 21, 22. The drummer was like 18.
Right.
So this goes against what you're saying, but I totally get what you're saying. But if I were to give myself advice, like my 16-year-old self or whatever, I'd be like, go, do it now, start now. Because I always used to be like, oh, I got a few more years to go before. It's like, it's your sweet spot in some ways will pass you by. Now, that being said, I don't know that my goals were all that high. I mean, of course, I wanted to be famous, make a lot of money, and you know, have music that helped people, you know,
right,
and inspire people. But I always said, you know, my goal is I want to be able to make money playing music. That's what I wanted to do, like, and not in a like materialistic way, but in a like, I can't believe someone's paying me to play guitar. Right. Like, that's crazy, right?
I still have that thought. I still have that thought when people hire me to do stuff, or even when people are buying music or coming to see shows,
yeah,
that same feeling. So yeah.
Yeah. And so I've had some of the best gigs in my life, like the last year, like high profile and stuff like that. Now, granted, I probably played one or two originals that I snuck in there, you know, and I'm kind of the gigs I'm playing now, like doing a lot of corporate gigs and stuff with like the Indianapolis Colts. I did 4 gigs for them earlier this year.
I saw that on your bio, dude. That's so awesome.
Yeah, man. I played for the wives of the players in the locker room. They had like awesome, before man. The season, right before the season started, they had a little, they called me and they're like, hey, can you, I was like, hell yeah, I'll do that. You know, what's funny is I did that. And then a week later I did this thing for the Ursay family who owns the Colts. And there was like, Peter Berg, the filmmaker, was there. He did Friday Night Lights. Yep, he's doing a documentary on Ursay. And the whole team was there. And I'm over here playing an instrumental Outcast, like looping So Fresh, So Clean. And that's the awesome. Running back, Jonathan Taylor, comes up to me and is just like digging it, you know? And it's just like, wow, dude, I can't believe this. Like,
that's the beauty of music right there. Right? It's like the place it'll take you. It's like you don't know. You could be playing like an old shitty bar one night, and the next night you're playing some ridiculous mansion party or festival. I mean, I think that's the allure of why we do what we do, because it's not predictable. None of it is predictable. You can't even predict the song you're going to write tomorrow because none of it is ever kind of planned. And that's kind of the beauty of what we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like you just said, you know, you and I are comfortable in so many different environments, in the worst and in the best. You know, it's like we're very professional, I think, and people want to hire us, and like sometimes that will go over the music. They're like, well, I can't have a flake here. You know, I can't have somebody that doesn't know, you know, how to act.
Right.
You know, and again, that's more like the corporate type of gig or whatever. But then you play in a bar, like you're saying, and there's three people there, and it's like that could go better. You know, that could be.
You know what's so funny? It's like I've had so many gigs where, you know, you know this, and it's like you've been at some of these festivals we played, and like
there's
like a bunch of people partying, and you know, the other night I did a Songwriters in the Round, and there were 15 people in the audience, or 12 people, 16 people in the audience, and everybody was listening. And I was like, man, I played for 10,000 people. That's awesome. But it is really sweet when you have a small room of people and everybody's listening. Nobody's talking. Nobody's partying. Everybody's just there for the music. And you're just playing for the song. I mean, I was like, man, I can't believe I would ever say I'd rather have a listening experience like that or a performing experience. But it's like you never know what room you're going to play where it's going to give you something that you didn't think you needed it, but it will, you know?
Sure, sure. Or what you're giving to them, it could be, you know, you could be playing a festival and it doesn't seem, you know, you're kind of looking around and it doesn't seem like too many people into it, but you really could affect one or two people that you didn't even see or something, you know? And it's like, that's what it's all about, man. It's just helping people or like helping them forget for a minute or something, you know?
I love that. I love that. You know, we lost some time just with the glitches, but can you play us in something else? You want to play a cover or something?
Yeah, let's see here.
Or not original, either one, whatever you want to play. I want you to play at least two songs.
You know, what's funny is like, I have all my stuff in an iPad, right? I got all the chords and the lyrics and stuff. And I feel like I'm so in a routine of like staring at that all the time that when it's off the cuff, dude,
what? You know, I'm going to tell you, this is a great ad for Prevagen because, like, dude, I feel like I can't memorize stuff as well as I could 20 years ago, which is crazy. Sure. So I need like a music stand with my own lyrics just so I'm like, oh, I know what I'm singing about because I wrote this and I should have it memorized. But for some reason, I can't memorize shit. So it's like, I feel you. I feel your pain. Don't worry. Do what you can. I just want to hear.
All right, let's see here. Maybe I'll do like Stand By Me or something like that.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. Okay. Yeah, great song.
When the night is gone and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stay by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, oh, stand by me. Oh, stand now. Stay by me. Stay by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountains crumble to the sea, I won't cry. I won't cry. No, I won't shed a tear. Just as long as you stay by me. So darling, darling, stay by me. Oh, oh, stay by me. Oh, stay now. Stay by me. Stay by me. Whenever you're in trouble, won't you stay by me? Oh, oh, stay by me. Oh, stand now.
Stay by me. Stay by me. Stay by me.
Yeah, man, that was killer, dude. And chills, man. That was great, dude. So soulful, dude. I love that you're pulling from soul music, rock music, funk music, folk music. I mean, does it ever kind of like stifle you as to the ways you love different music? What are you pulling from now? Like, what are you listening to right now?
You know, it's funny. I used to say when I was in high school, like, I love all kinds of music except for country, right?
Me too.
And it was just like, and I didn't even like the Stones at that point, you know? And, you know, later in life, you find out like, okay, maybe I don't like pop country or something, right? Because there's tons of good country. And old school stuff is my favorite, right? Yeah, me too. Like, the last 10 years, like, I really got into it. But as far as bands I'm listening to, I mean, Steve Lacy, you know, it's a little like Bad Habits. You don't know him?
No.
You probably heard the song Bad Habit.
Yes.
Bite my tongue, it's a bad habit. He recorded that on his iPhone. Did you know that?
Wow.
Yeah, he did his whole album on an iPhone.
What?
You should look up. He's from Compton. You should look up. There's a video of him, like, you know, talking about it. Like, oh, I do this, and I put it in the bass line.
Steve Lacy, that's his name?
Steve Lacy, yep.
I'm going to look him up.
Bad Habit, you know that song. And then he has another song. You'd be like, oh, I know that one too. It's got two hits. There's a band called, Wet Leg. Have you heard Wet Leg?
No.
They're from England. It's two girls and two guys, a female singer. Their song, Angelica, is really cool, man. Have you heard Will Smith's daughter, Willow?
No. I mean, I've heard I Whip My Hair, but I haven't heard anything since.
Oh yeah, that's funny. She has like heavy guitars, a killer drummer, a killer voice. Like, she's evolved into a powerhouse musician for real.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because that's someone I would be biased against, where I'd be like, I don't know. Like, they would have to go anyway, right?
There's so many artists that I now have, I've like disintegrated. I used to say I wouldn't listen to pop. Now I love pop.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's nothing on the table that you can show me that I'd be like, I mean, as I get older, I lose all the judgments. You know, it's like,
oh yeah, right.
You're like, music is great. If it's great, it's great. It doesn't matter. Like, the genre, I don't care about the genre. Show me something good in any genre, it's going to fly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, right.
I love that you're pulling from all these things. Where are you playing next? Where can people find you online?
Well, you can find me at mattrecord.com. I've got some dates up there. I understand this is an LA centric audience. So I don't know if you're going to be in Noblesville, Indiana.
You know what? It's worldwide, bro.
Oh,
it's
good.
Worldwide.
Hey, there we go. All right. Hey, December 17th, Saturday, it'll be a Grindstone Public House in Noblesville. They got a great, great stage there. Great food, great people. You know, that's kind of the only thing. Wintertime kind of slows down, right? I mean, for gigs I'm doing, you know, and I mean, you don't like having to drive. I've been trying to stay close to home and do gigs because I was driving all over the place, and then you get a snowstorm, dude. It's no good.
No, it's not worth it. Like, I find that, I was just joking with a friend of mine. I'm like, I find it more beneficial to stay home and not play unless it's worth it to go out and play. And it's like, we musicians have put enough music out there and done enough to know, like, yo, if you want something that's convenient and not as good, then get it. But if you want something decent that I know you're going to get something good from, then call me. And if you don't, I can stay at home and live that home life. I'm okay with it. So that's old age, though. That's like where you're like in your mid-40s, like, I'm okay with just kicking it at home and watching some tube.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. But it's also sometimes that can, like, you know, if you're picky about where you're playing, you know, that can be a good thing, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
But, you know, and there's something to be said about taking every gig too. But that's a younger man's game, I think, you know, for the most part.
Absolutely.
It's funny. I mean, I have like physical ailments now a little bit, you know, like I've got arthritis, and it's like playing guitar with arthritis sucks, man.
You know what? Use a brace. That's my
okay.
Use a brace. It helps with carpal tunnel. It helps with all of that. Sometimes I sleep with it.
It's a
huge tip. It's a $20 tip that you can get at a Rite Aid store.
Like when you're not playing guitar?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, interesting.
And man, I'm telling you, it is a lifesaver. It's like
a brace that holds it.
I'll even show you the brace. I have it right here with me all the time.
That's what I was picturing.
And you know what? It's got like a little thing that you just, it helps all your carpal tunnel.
You use that when you're rollerblading too? So you
Easy there, Randy Travis, all right? Oh, I forgot you can't see me. Can you see me?
Oh, I can see
you. Okay, you can see me. Okay, never mind.
This is the CeeLo radio program, right?
Oh, man, I miss you, dude. Dude, you got to come to L.A., man. We got to work on some shows together. We got to play some music.
I really would like to, and I was going to mention to you, there's a couple people from Indiana that live out there. One kid from my hometown, again, this tiny little town, there's a lot of musical talent there, and there's a band called Pacifier. They're kind of a reggae rock band based out of Savannah, Georgia, but he lives in L.A. His name's Will Kubley, and his solo project is called Body Haunt. Like haunting, like ghost body haunt. And the guy's like a savant. And when he was a little kid, he was like modifying pedals. And like, I mean, he's a freak of nature. But so that's a guy I'd like to work with. And then there's this guy from Michigan City, Indiana, who works at Sunset Sound now. His name's Drew Dempsey. He runs their podcast. They've got some great, like, well, they have interviews with Prince's engineer and like Van Halen's engineer. I mean, you should look up Sunset Sound's YouTube stuff. It's really cool. So I would really like to get out there and like organize.
You and I are family, man. You have a place to stay at my place. So
hey, thank you, man.
You're welcome to come out here anytime because I miss hanging with you and I miss just laughing with you. You and I always used to laugh big time, dude.
Well, you know what's funny is we worked at Guitar Center together probably only like 2 or 3 months.
Yep.
And then we stayed in touch after that and we hung out after that. And we, you know, when I was in Chicago and you would come to Milwaukee every summer and I would go up there and help you out at
not a lot of people know this and I'm going to expose this, but you're doing vocals on our live record for In Your Eyes.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Brian and I have a songwriting team. We'll have to get you involved with that. Now,
oh man, would love to, man. Dude, yeah, that would be fantastic.
You're the man.
I need to get back into the original stuff, you know. It's kind of
welcome back, dude. I'm your link to that, and we're gonna make that happen. But you know what? In the meantime, we're gonna invite you back to Wake Up Hollywood in about 9 or 10 months.
Hey,
we want to just keep on growing with you. That's the whole point of this radio show. Thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, Matt. I love you like a brother, man. You are a musical family to me. You always will. I look forward to laughing with you soon. Come to LA, man. Come to LA. You've got a place to stay. You know we can always hang and we can jam, make some music, all right?
Hey, thank you, man. You're a great motivator and a great friend, man. And it's like riding a bike with you, dude.
Likewise. I still need to meet your family, dude, because now
that's
you're
right.
And all that. But I will make a trip. I will make a trip to the Midwest and play in a city near you so that we can have you sit in with the band and we'll do a little jam, all right?
Let's do it, man, for sure.
On behalf of Matt, myself, and Sam, happy holidays, everybody. We'll see you guys next week. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Ed.